16 pounds. See, that was quite,
it's unusual.
Yeah, that's weight. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And you had how many brothers and sisters?
Six brothers and a half brother and two sisters.
And your mother had you all the children at home?
All the children at home. And my aunt was a midwife, and she was the Swedish lady, Mrs. Adamson. That was, of course, my grandfather was Swedish. You know, he came over. I don't know when he did come over, but
Your mother was two.
Yeah, my mother was two.
And she was born 1884.
Oh, yeah. So
he must have come over 1886.
Yeah. He was up on the farm there, and I imagine he built the barn farm up there, because we had one of these old wells, you know, where you pull down and have a bucket on it, you know, like they have over in Sweden. That was the well there when we first moved up there from Faulkner when we bought the farm. Then I was about 5-6 years old when we moved up there.
Sitting together with Delbert Corcoran in Jamestown, New York, and he was born 1911, May 4th in Falcon, New York. And your mother, she was of Swedish background.
Oh, yes.
Hanna Adamson.
Right.
So tell me a little bit about your father now, Corcoran. He was of Irish descent.
He was born, his dad, of course, was come over from Ireland. But I never see them because, he was orphaned when he was a young man, or a boy, you might say. And then he had three brothers. My middle son, John, he wants to look up the roots, for the Irish part of it. And so my dad's brothers, one was an actor down in New York City, and then the other one, he went away, so I never see any of the brothers at all, but he had three brothers. So my dad's part of the family, I never see.
Did both his parents die, both mother and father?
Must be, because they
were... He came to a home, Catholic home.
Yeah.
And he was raised there until he was old.
So then I imagine he went to the home about 11, 12 years old. That's what I understand, when I heard him talking when he was a kid, So that's about all I know about him. But,
and then he came to Jamestown later?
Yeah, looking for work, And then he worked... and furniture and like that. That was the main. And he even worked in Corry, Pennsylvania, in a furniture factory there. And Jamestown was a large furniture business, So that's about all I know, that he come around here.
So then he met your mother, Susanna Adamson.
Yeah.
And she came from Sweden when she was 2 years old?
2 years old.
With her parents?
Yeah, with their parents. And
and they settled in Jamestown.
In Jamestown, they came right to Jamestown, And Faulkner area is where they actually came, because they came over with a family by the name of Jacobson, and they was our neighbors for years, other Swedish family. And then they settled right down here to Faulkner. And right in that area.
Did he buy a farm, your grandfather, or?
He bought a farm. I mean, it was a small farm of 17 acres, and that's what he lived on. And our neighbors, they was from Sweden. Their name was Balder, and they also, lived nearby, and they was farm. They just had a cow and a pig, and raised potatoes in the garden, and that's the way they lived them days.
But he had to have another job.
But then most of them would work, if they could get a job in a factory or so, then they'd work and then have the, we'd walk home and then, it would, that's the way we made a living,
Did get they a, walk into Jamestown then to get a job? Or
no, in the Faulkner's where we used to walk to work every day for winter and summer, We was never late for work. We was always got there on time. Because them days you worked, you didn't fool around like they do today, you know, stay home. And yeah, we walked all the time. I never had a car till I was 26 years old. My dad never did have a car. We always walked. Yeah.
So then your parents, they met then and got married. And
yeah.
And did they take over your grandfather's farm?
Yeah, see, when my grandfather started getting older, well then, see, I was only about 5 or 6 then, and then, so then we bought his farm off from Grandpa. And then he moved back down to Faulkner and built a little house up by the cemetery in Faulkner. So him and Grandma lived there, and then we used to come down and see them, you know. And I always got along good with my grandfather, but I couldn't speak Swedish, but we understood enough, so we got by, you know. Yeah, and
so you picked up a few Swedish words.
Yeah.
Did he talk Swedish to his daughter all the time?
Oh yeah. See, they never did speak English either, Grandma or Grandpa, you know, because they always talked Swedish, you know. Yeah, it was from way back, you know, them days, you know, talking that many years ago, right? When they never learned English too much, you know, just a few words, but yeah, they was good old Swedish people, you know.
So, and your dad, no, he was an Irishman coming into the Swedish.
So
what happened there then? He was a Catholic and your mother was Lutheran?
Yeah, or? But dad wasn't much on the Catholic, you know. He never went to mass or all that, you know. He kind of got away from it. He wasn't like some of them, you know, to go, but, you know, he would, you know, like we didn't bother about not eating fish on Friday because it tastes just good on Friday as it did the rest of the week, and so we never was. He wasn't that strict, you know, like some Catholics are. You know, they wouldn't let you. You are supposed to eat fish on Friday, you know, no meat. But we didn't go by that. No.
Where were they married?
Did you know where they was married at? No, for sure. I would imagine in Faulkner. I don't know.
Your grandfather, no? Did he belong to the church in Faulkner or in Jamestown?
Ma, do you think he did? Grandpa, did they belong to a church? Bethlehem Lutheran in Faulkner is where my mother and them used to go, and that's where
did I... Did you go there too occasionally?
Oh yeah, I went there when I was a kid, yeah.
Confirmed there?
Yeah. Yeah, that was Felix Hansom that confirmed me, and that was a Jamestown church. Mm-hmm. And our oldest son got confirmed by the same one. Why don't you stay in here and then I can get a little bit of information instead of being so far away.
So all your brothers and sisters then went to this church and got confirmed,
right,
and baptized and confirmed.
Yeah, right.
Oh. Not confirmed, some of them were confirmed.
No.
But they were baptized.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's right. They didn't get this because we didn't go through all that. That's what you got to go.
You didn't go through Sunday school either.
Yeah, we went occasionally, but not steady, you know.
How about the Swedish summer school in the summer? You can't remember?
No, nothing like
maybe
that.
Maybe they didn't have it in Jamestown.
They didn't have it, I don't think. In them days, you know,
so
I don't think they had it. No.
Picked it up easy.
Yeah. No, they.
So, and your father then was working in factories, you see, the furniture factories?
Oh yeah, I worked in the furniture factories.
He had no trouble to find work at that time?
No. See, he was a finisher in the furniture factory. That's where, you know, put on the varnish and that. He was an expert in that, you know. Because that's the way you either worked in a machine room or the cabinet room or the finishing room, you know, and he worked up in the finishing room. So he was a... would repair the cabinets and all that, you know.
And it was in Jamestown?
The factory was in Faulkner. Jamestown Mail Company, they made radio cabinets. And during World War I, they made That was, I remember World War I when that was started, you know. And he worked in that Jamestown Mantle Company. That was manufacture radio cabinets and, you know, furniture like that, yeah.
Did you have a job in one of those factories?
Oh yeah, I worked, I quit school when I was about 16, and then I worked in a woolen mill, was the first job, and then I worked at the Jamestown Mantle Company. Then the Depression come along, and then I got laid off at the Mantle Company, and then it went bankrupt, you know. That was first beginning of the Depression. And so I worked at the Mantle Company until they went out of business. I helped even unload the last load of mahogany that, because I went by there, and then the boss said, "You want a job for today?" So we worked, you know, whenever we could get a job. So I helped unload they had the fireman there and then a couple other guys, and we helped unload that load of mahogany lumber, yeah. Yeah, I worked in quite a few furniture factories.
And then there was a long layoff because of
Depression. And then the Depression hit, and then I worked in a woolen mill, and then I went in that was when they were real bad. That was 1933. Why, my oldest brother was in the army, and then I was, and then my next older brother, he went in the CC camp, the Civilian Conservation Corps, you know, and that was what Roosevelt had, you know, to give them work, and then they got off the streets, you know. So then I went in the CC camp in October of 1933, and 1934 was when Roosevelt took office, you know. And I worked at Fort Hunt, Virginia, to Washington, D.C. on the bridle path. That's where the big shots drove their horses, ride horseback back and forth, you know. So then my other oldest brother, he was an army man, then Bob, my next older brother, he was in a CC camp, and then my dad was on WPA, that was Works Project Association, you know, and that was when they put the father to the families to give him a job, you know, working around the Faulkner there. So we never went on welfare relief. You know.
But the young people, like you know, you had to go out of town then to get
a CC job. We had
the CC program, what does it really stand for? CC?
Civilian Conservation Corps.
And it was to take care of, like you said, bridle paths.
Yeah, yeah. See, that was a FDR, the old, that was his, it was like, it was run by the army, you know. We had like an old 1918 uniforms of the army, and that was, and then we had the brown old army coat and all that, and you know, that was CC camp. Yeah, so we went in there, and then,
how
so
long did you stay with it? A year?
We just stayed 6 months.
6 months.
Yeah,
and then you come back home.
Then we come back. And then I come back home.
And see, a new then, group had to go in then.
Yeah, well, you could stay longer if you wanted to, but then I come back and then I got a job again. So, and I worked on the Chautauqua County highways on the highway for that summer. And, you know, then you'd pick up jobs, you know, you could go around, like you could walk around up to Jamestown and the Erie Railroad, that was running them days. You could get a job for a day or so unloading a car or even unloading a carload of coal in some of these factories, you know, that you could have a job unloading a carload of coal, you know, for the factories, because most of them burnt coal, you know, in their boilers. So you could pick up work if you walked around look for it. But it was hard to get a job.
Was there specific age on those guys that can go to the CC camp, even older ones, 40, 45?
Yeah, they could go. They didn't have no age limit. If they wanted to, if they needed to go, they had them all kinds of ages. Yeah, they had older guys. Fact is, a lot of them older guys went in and they give them a job, like showing the younger ones what to do, you know. See, like with me, I had a little experience with, you know, I'd done a little about everything, and so I had charge of sharpening the scythes and axes and that, you know, and and showing them how to work it. You know, a lot of them city guys, they didn't know how to. They would take a side and they say, oh, that looks easy. And then they'd take it. I remember that one young fella, old Jack DeYoung, let me have it, I can do that. And he would draw the side about halfway into the ground. Couldn't hardly pull it out again, so he'd give up right away. I mean, that's the way it was then, you know. You, one guy helped out the other and worked together.
And you had a common kitchen then, I mean, cooking crew with you.
Oh yeah, they had
it. You stayed in barracks?
Yeah, we stayed in barracks, and we run it just like an army. They had a mess kit, you know, where went by, and then they put the food on there, and then you washed your, they had three wash tubs with water in it. The first one was where you throw what was left in your pan, and the next one was to rinse it, and then the last one was where you, that was the way they did, then you cup, you just emptied it out, and, you know, they run them days just like, there was no such thing as health or anything like that. They just lived off the land, you might say, you know. Yeah, they run it like an army camp. We had some old army officers that was the head of the camp, you know.
So they had roll call in the morning?
Yeah.
So nobody could skip?
Oh yeah, they run it like an army camp, yeah.
So,
we sent $8 home, they sent $22 home to the family, and we had $8 to spend. They give us $8.
What could you
a
spend
month.
It on? Where were you located? In the towns or?
Yeah, you sometimes, like we could go into Alexandria, Virginia, or we could go even into Washington, D.C. on the weekends. That's when I first time went to Washington, D.C. was you could, on the weekends, the truck could bring you in, you know, with a gang of guys, you know, and then you could go what they call liberty, you know, you could go around and the trucks would go back again at night, you know, or on a Saturday or whatever, and then we would ride back, and yeah, you had a little freedom to go around. And,
but those CC camps, now they had them in this area too?
Oh yeah, they had them, they planted forests and trees right up here in Panama, and they had them right, Allegheny State.
Send the people from here all the way to Alexandria, Virginia?
Well, that's the way the government does work. You know?
Yeah.
That's what, this was another idea, too, of them doing that, because you see, if you get a gang of men from around this area, you see, they want to split them up, see, put a few, see, like you would go into like we went down to Fort Dix, New Jersey, see, that was an army camp, and then they would take, they would see what your work was before you come in, and then they would send them different ones in different areas, you know, because sometimes they needed a guy that worked on a truck, you know, or something, and then the other guys that, see, a lot of these city guys, you know, if they all got together, well, then they wouldn't have no control over them. That was the idea of parting them up.
Mixing them up.
Well, they had the Allegheny State Park, and then they, right up here in Panama, they had a large CC camp. You know, that was all over the country. See, that was the idea, was to clean up the forest and do work, you know, they put in bridges and stuff, and they'd done a lot of work, a lot of it.
So what did happen out here in Jamestown then between 1930 and 35? There were no unions then?
Oh, no. The unions never started until, right around after, well, it was 35. Yeah, it was around 30, 35, though, was when they started to organize, because I helped organize the Monitor Furniture Union, you know, because they was only paying 10, 15 cents an hour for a lot of jobs, you know. So we started to get organized then.
There were no... You know, in other cities like Rockford and Chicago, they had Swedish socialists.
Oh yeah, they
were. Were they in the Jamestown?
Oh yeah, we had what they call the Swedish Reds.
The Swedish Reds.
Oh yeah.
What were they doing then? During that.
Well, they was around. You know, they talked. You know, union and organization and all that. And they was down in Brooklyn Square, and then on Sunday mornings, I remember. they used to come down, come around and distribute the Daily Worker. You know, remember that communist magazine? Yeah, they used to come around Sunday mornings and throw it on your porch, you know.
Well, it was free. You didn't have to pay.
Oh, no. They was still, they was trying to get you to join up, you know.
Subscriptions.
And Hugo belonged to that.
Your brother?
Swedish, you know. See, that was the Swedish Red, you know. They was organized. You remember how they was. Probably you don't because you're younger. But, you know, they was the ones that kind of organized and, you know, wanted to get things a little better for the working man. That's what it amounted to.
But what happened to those agitators now? Were they stamped by their management as being rebels?
Well, see, them days, they couldn't get a foothold because you had to know somebody to get work them days. And if they got in the shop and they started any talk or anything, they'd be fired.
Immediately?
Oh, yeah. I've seen them fire guys right on the job. I mean, you know, if you didn't do your work, why, they'd get rid of you. See, management had control them days. See, they couldn't even get started. The fact is, they were in Jamestown. They got so they didn't have a chance. I mean, they had to go on welfare. I mean, you know, because they wouldn't hire them, they couldn't get a job.
So they were frozen out then?
Oh yeah, they was out, yeah. Yeah, you didn't have any, I know there's a lot of places that wanted to start a union, but they were like Marl Rockwell, the first few that tried to organize down there, they got fired. And then, of course, then the unions got stronger. See, that was in the 40s, and that was before the war. And then they had to take them back afterwards, but
so it was not until Roosevelt and what was this guy now that Wallace with the law of have the right to organize that came in 1934 or 35.
Yeah, it was Roosevelt and was it Wallace? Okay, that's something.
Wallace, yeah.
Who was the
they gave them the 8 hours work day and
that's
the right to organize.
Right, that's right.
So then the union could start to.
Then they could. The company had to let you organize, you know. But whether you got accepted or not, that was up to the company.
So what happened? Oh, you said you were along with organizing the
Monitor Furniture.
Monitor Furniture.
Yeah, they didn't bother us any because
we.
Yeah, they was they had them around town, you know, different ones was organizing. See, I was on the Central Labor Council for quite a few years, and they didn't bother you too much then, but then they kept getting stronger, you know.
But were you not afraid then to join this council, I mean, to get shoved off the work?
No.
They couldn't fire you?
No, if you done your job in the factory, they couldn't fire you for what you done after you got out of work.
No, but I mean just a few years before.
A few years before you couldn't do anything like that.
So the law helped you then to protect
your rights? So then when they put the law to protect your rights, see, then you could. But otherwise before then, well, you couldn't do nothing.
Were you able to talk? Not on the job, you couldn't talk about it.
No.
But was in between the breaks, coffee breaks.
Oh, yeah.
Did you have coffee breaks?
No.
No coffee breaks?
Yeah. There was no such thing as that them days.
There was breakfast before work, and then straight all the way through?
Oh, yeah, straight all the way through. Only break you got when you went in the can. Otherwise, you didn't have no breaks. There was no such thing as that. No, you worked.
Yeah. How about during the lunch hour? No, did you brought your own lunch or?
I always brought my lunch.
Were you sitting together in the group?
Oh yeah, we could sit around whatever gang.
And then you could talk.
Oh yeah, we could talk. Like if some guys, they would sit around and talk or play cards, or whatever they wanted to do. Oh yeah, there was no restriction there.
No.
You know that.
But were people afraid to speak up really what they wanted?
Oh yes, a lot of them didn't dare to. A lot of them didn't even, older fellas, they didn't even dare to join the union. They afraid to get fired, you know.
So
you know.
They were sitting, still sitting.
Yeah, they was, you know, they was old and they didn't want to get, we had quite a job. There was only, when we started our first union there to monitor furniture, it was only 30 cents an hour dues. And I was the one that went around to try to collect it, you know, and it was a hard job to even get 30 cents out of them. But it gradually got a little better, but you know, it wasn't as organized as it was today. But no, we didn't have no breaks or nothing. No.
What did the members get for 30 cents dues? There was a month.
Yeah. Well,
what did they get them?
Well, all they did was they belonged to the. See, and then if we had five guys on the board, you know, to go in to negotiate, you know, like for a raise or something, and or better working conditions, you know. But that's the only thing that they got was a little representation of the people, you know. You know, if some guy was complaining that he had to work too hard or he didn't get enough wages, you know, we'd go to the superintendent and president of the place and talk to him. And so that's the way it was them days.
So did you have any meeting with the management office?
Yeah, we.
What did they say then?
Well, then they would say, well, business is bad and we can't afford to give any more wages right now. And they was at that time in bad shape, monitor furniture, because it was, that was just coming out of the Depression. And there was several weeks that we didn't get paid. I mean, they didn't have enough money to meet the payroll. So we worked with them. I mean, we went without pay for two or three weeks, just, you know, until they did get the pay, and then they would pay us, you know. I made, because I worked, but the average rate then was only about 35, 40 cents an hour. But we worked piecework on a glue wheel. Sometimes we'd make 60 cents an hour.
I see.
But otherwise, there wasn't much piecework them days.
Who set the rate for the piecework? The
bosses did that.
Bosses.
Oh yeah, the management didn't have anything to do. The guys didn't have nothing to do with setting the rates them days.
The bosses now, were they Swedish?
Oh yeah, most of them were Swedish. Oh yeah, there was very few that wasn't Swedish. Yeah.
So did they favor the workers or the management?
No, management. But all. His name was Dahlstrom. He was head of our union. He run the bandsaw, and he was a good negotiator, good talker, you know. So he was such a good talker and got going so good that they made a foreman out of him. See, that's the way they would eliminate a guy that was a leader. Well, they'd make a foreman out of him, see, and then he'd side in with the company in that way, why the company both had him as a good worker, you know, and so the company used to recognize a man, you know, if he was a leader.
So the guy fell for that temptation?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So then
even to go against his buddies?
Yeah, that's right. They would go in with it, you know, because them days it was. You had to help yourself, and you know, you had to look out for yourself because nobody else would.
But what happened then?
Not all
did
of
that. It. He had no protection for the union then?
Oh, no, no protection. The union.
He has to go out of the union.
Yeah, then he was out of the union. But them days, the union couldn't protect nothing. I mean, they didn't have that much power they would fire even a. Union man, and they wouldn't bother to do anything about it. See, jobs was too scarce then, and organizing was just starting. Because what there was the trouble with Jamestown, they had too many Italians that got in on that, and they didn't want to work in the first place.
What do you mean in unions?
Yeah, they got into unions in Jamestown. And
to start with, now, did the union protect all different groups, like Irish, Germans?
Oh, yeah, yeah, oh, yeah.
Italians? There was no discrimination?
Oh, no, no, no. No, they're workers. There was all kinds. There was some was Irish, some was Polish, you know, and oh no, they protected the worker.
They did.
Oh, there was no discrimination.
There was no favoritism towards the Swedes.
No. Not when it come to, you know, the organizing in the union. So no, they, but I mean the factory itself, you know, would favor, you know, the management would. But
pick out certain
yeah, that's right.
Out of all the characters.
Yeah. That's right. And,
so with the unions now, you had 8 hours workday. They couldn't press you anymore.
Oh yeah, no.
They had to pay you overtime.
Oh no. There's no such thing as that.
No.
We work 9 3/4 hours. There was no such thing as time and a half them days.
Yeah, but there was a law though on the books that said 8 hours a day.
They wasn't strong enough. They didn't do a thing about it.
And no vacation?
No vacation. No such thing as that.
Could they call you in, for instance, on Saturdays?
Oh yeah, they could call you. They could call you anytime. I mean, if they wanted you to work, and there was no such thing as we ever worked on Sunday them days. I mean, we was just work a regular work week, you know. And then Sundays was a day off. We worked a lot of times half a day Saturday, you know, like 55 hours. So we'd work 10 hours a day, 5 hours on Saturday. And we'd work 55 hours a week, no extra at all.
And there was no hospitalization program?
Oh, no, nothing. No protection at all.
So when you started out now then, who led you into better condition? Did you figure it out yourself, or did you have some outside help helping you to organize?
Well, you see, that was it. I mean, they start organizing gradually, you know, to belong to a union, and then it help you to get a little better working conditions or get a little more wages. But the unions wasn't strong.
You didn't have anybody from Buffalo or Pittsburgh coming in and telling you, we have a
union. Oh, no. Well, see, finally, when the United Furniture Workers got organized more, you know, different Art Metal and all them, then we got a representative from Buffalo, you know, to help with the organization of a union, you know, or if you had any trouble or anything. But that was in the later years. That was way up in the 40s before that started.
Because I suppose that the management didn't like if you had some outsider coming in.
Oh no, they didn't.
Did they find out quite fast, or?
Did they what?
Did they find out?
Oh yeah, fast? They find out fast.
Somebody.
Yeah. Because some bird would go back and squeal, you know. Oh yeah, we had a lot of them guys that was, you know, we had a name for them, but you know, they.
Yeah, what did you call them?
Sokol, you know.
Sokol?
Yeah.
Is that a Polish word or?
No, that's, you know, that's, you've heard that expression.
No, I never heard that.
No. Sucking around the boss, you know.
Oh, I
see. Around, yeah, so they used to call them that, you know. And then, that was, you know, the rough name for them.
The word.
Yeah, you know, they're licking around the hind end, you know, that's what they'd call them, you know, yeah, because they'd go squeal, you know. A lot of them did, you know, to save their own neck, you know, or to better theirself, you know.
Yeah.
But they soon.
Yeah, but weren't they afraid, though, to lose their friendship of.
Well, them days, everybody was for theirself, and they wasn't afraid, you know, I mean, it was just you had a job, you try to keep it one way or another, and they wasn't too much afraid, you know.
Because I suppose all those workers, they belong to the church and they belong to Viking.
Oh yeah,
and the boss,
yeah.
And,
yeah.
And
yeah.
You would think the friendship would be diminished.
Oh yeah, they was. I mean,
it was spread fast.
Yeah, it was spread fast. So most of the guys would think twice before they would do that. You know, I mean, but you could. They generally wasn't too many of them, but there was a few. And
did it help now? For instance, if you. There was a saying I talked to some of them years ago, that if you belong to the Covenant Church, you got a good job at Dahlstrom's, they said.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and
it's just like I got into Crescent Tool when that was 1934, after I got back out of the CC camp, when they made the new Crestaloy Wrench, And I had Gladys Hjalmarsson, my cousin, she got me in Crescent Tool, because they even had green Swedes working in Crescent Tool that couldn't even speak English. No. The old Carl Peterson got them over here, you know, from Sweden, you know. And that's the only way you could get in a lot of these factories, by knowing somebody or going to a church. Most of it was, you know, just like a church or something. But the lodges and that didn't have much power then.
Well, the lodges didn't have power.
Yeah.
But no. The churches had.
Churches, you know, and then a relative, you know, of somebody, and like Blackstone, Oscar Linné, you know, and all them, if you knew them, and he'd get you in. And, yeah, that's the way they got
jobs.
Was
he a powerful man, Oscar Linné?
Oh, yeah, I should say, Blackstone. Yeah, he was a powerful man in Jamestown, yeah.
And also in politics?
Yeah, he got people, even brought them over from Sweden, you know, and paid their way over and got them over here, you know. A lot of the big furniture guys, well, I imagine Nord and all them did the same thing, yeah. You know.
But like in Linné, didn't he have a shady beginning though with the business and
yeah.
Get him started?
Yeah.
So he was not a churchman actually?
No, not always. They wasn't always in church.
But they went to church, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. They belonged to a church because that gave them prestige, you know, and kind of, to make it look good, you know. They probably didn't even give them didn't even attend or anything, but they...
You were not married when you started with the union activities? But how about a man that joined the union? Do you think his wife told him a few things to stay out of it? Or?
No, I don't think his wife knew the first thing about what was going on.
They wouldn't understand what was going on?
Nah, women didn't understand unions. They'd done their work as raising their kids, and they probably didn't know the first thing about what was going on in the factory. The men, that's the way it was with me, you know, at the home, I never said anything. You got a cough drop?
Yes, honey.
Coffee breaks and that's the problem. That's all new stuff, you know.
New stuff.
Yeah.
Did you discuss it with your father, for instance, problems with union activities? What did
you
he
want
say?
A cough drop?
Dad, he was a union man because he belonged to the painters union, you know. He was all for union, you know, because then the painters union was quite strong in Jamestown. And he belonged to, we used to get the painters magazine, you know. That was one of the first that organized was the painters union.
So he was a few years ahead of
the oh, yeah, they was ahead of the... you know, like we worked in the factory then, they had the painters union then, you know. That started way back in the 1900s, you know. They was strong then, and then he belonged to that. Yeah, he was always for the union, you know, because he's great in a way for wanting to talk, you know. And he was the old Irish wit, you know, and he got along good with them guys. Of course, he'd done a little drinking too, you know.
How did he get along? Well, he was married not to a Swede.
Oh, yeah.
They helped him quite a bit, I suppose, to get into the Swedish.
No.
Because the Swede always looked, you know, like an Italian. You got to be suspicious.
No, well, see, that was way back. But then they had to hire other people too, you know. I mean, there was other people that didn't have to be Swede, you know, to be good at a job, you know. So there was no discrimination as far as that, but as far as jobs goes, why they would favor somebody if they needed a man, you know, they'd get the job first, you know. But otherwise...
There was more in the 20s and early 30s then that they could discriminate because there were a lot of Swedes coming in.
Oh yeah, that's right. See, and they, like I said, when I was born and lived here, and then they had Swedes that worked at Crescent Tool that just come over. Couldn't even hardly speak English, and they worked at Crescent Tool.
And they were safe in the workplace.
Well, they were safe.
They couldn't speak anything.
Yeah, they were safe because they couldn't nobody fire them because they was hired by management and then they was protected by them.
But for instance, you know, the managers were probably afraid of you because you could express yourself and get things moving.
Yeah.
Did you feel that at any time that you had a watching eye on you?
Oh yeah, especially, see, this was the Crescent Tool, that was way before it even started unions, but the Monitor Furniture, why superintendent come to me a couple of times and told me I better not to get involved in the unions and all that, you know, otherwise you might not have a job. So they made you, you know, they would come, they would tell you, the bosses would tell you too, you better stay away from them, they're no good, and, you know, well, I was told that a lot of times.
Did you take any action to it? Or?
Well, no, we just kind of took it easy, you know, and then gradually, you know, we worked and didn't pay, we didn't, at noon or anything like that, we didn't gather together, but then we had we used to meet down in the labor council meeting about once a month or so, and then when they started to organize, you know. But otherwise, a guy had to be afraid of his job them days, because
and especially if it was married.
The married guys, you couldn't blame them because
they were softer.
Yeah, that's right, because they had the kids, you know, at home, and they had to have a job. Yeah.
But like you said, you know, for 25, 30 cents an hour, there was not much to feed the family on.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, during the Depression, the Jamestown Table Company paid 8 cents an hour. I only got 15 cents an hour when I worked at Jamestown Sterling, hand sanding. I only got 15 cents an hour. My dad got 40 cents because he was an experienced finisher. And you had to know somebody then, because my dad knew the foreman, old Maynard Price, his name was. He was a foreman, and Dad used to work with him at the mantle company, and he was a foreman there. So he's the one that got Dad a job, and then I got a job there. That was when old Pickard run the Jamestown Sterling. That was an awful cheap place to work. See, they wasn't organized then either. And there's where they would fire you. I see them fire guys right on the spot. The old superintendent would walk behind a post and watch somebody if they wasn't busy working. You'd call them in and give them their money if they had coming, and they had to go.
Well, they paid them off on the spot?
Well, they paid them off. See, they only paid by cash them days.
Was he marked off, then he could never return again?
No, they wouldn't give him a job again.
Do you think they called to other companies to blackmail them in some way?
Yeah, the whole Jamestown was that way. They all stuck together. If a guy got messed up in town, like he was like an organizer or anything, he couldn't ever get a job around Jamestown. That's why a lot of them went out of Jamestown. Yeah, Jamestown was really a town where the main ones, the old Swede guys, you know.
They could make it miserable.
Oh yeah.
But they didn't affect if you had to move to Buffalo, for instance.
They didn't pay no attention then. As long as they got out of here, they didn't. They didn't hold to you.
Crescent Tool now, they had their own union.
Yeah, well, they never organized way till way back, in the 40s, just before the war, and then they started to organize then. But Crescent Tool was a good place to work. I'd say they treated their employees good, and they gave them quite good paying wages, you know. Of course, a lot of them was the old ones that worked there 35, 40 years, you know. And
so they didn't have a high turnover on labor then?
No,
they stayed there.
They stayed there. They didn't. The only time they'd turn over is when they got laid off. But Crescent Tool was a good place to work.
But don't you think that some companies can fool a worker, I mean, for 20 years and make him believe, you know, there's no other places?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they did that too. Yeah, they held it over the guys. You better stay here because things ain't so good somewhere else, you know.
Do you think the Swedes fell for the easier than any others?
A lot of them did, but of course it wasn't all that gullible, you know. They would, they'd step out and get somewhere else. Yeah.
How about the Italians now? Because there was a bad word in the Swedish community. Italians.
Yeah, they was, the Italians are not, they more for growing fruit than, they're kind of a lazy sort of people. They wasn't as ambitious as Swedish people, and they're not to down them or anything, but I don't think they had the intelligence of...
What the difference between Italians and Italians? I mean,
There was some Italians that was better than others, but a lot of them, you know, when they didn't speak too good of English, there wasn't much use for them, you know, because they couldn't even speak good English either, you know, and so they just had them for like janitor for sweeping up or, you know, doing the dirty work, you know.
So you never saw an Italian coming up in a foreman position during the
tournament? Oh, no. Crescent Tool, they was all Swedes, every one of them. But, they bought out Smith and Hemingway. That was a big tool company in New Jersey. And they took also some of the foremen from there. And that was the first Italian foreman that they had in Crescent Tool. But he didn't stay too long. He just... come with the company that they bought out and helped them, but that was the only first and only Italian that they had, but otherwise Crescent Tool never had an Italian at the head of anything there. Well, Oscar Linné too, I mean.
Well, the Blackstone the same way.
Blackstone same way. There was a few foremen in the finishing room in the later years, that was... your finishing room ain't the greatest job, it's that varnish and stain and stink, of lacquer. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them, some of them become foremen, but otherwise Italians never become anything of it, only until the later years.
Did they resent that position, the Italians, you think? I mean, how did they express themselves?
Well, you see, that was another trait about the Italians. They was kind of they do a lot of talking and that, but they would never get anywhere because they wasn't very intelligent and then they wasn't very ambitious. But they finally got control, got in more and more all the time. But Swedish has been mostly the power in Jamestown. Which it should be, I mean, because the Italians just didn't have it, it was more for farming or running a fruit store or something like that, they were satisfied with that.
How about outside the workplace, on the street, for instance, the dances and the entertainments, did the Italians mix with the Swedes or?
Not too much, no, mostly Italians stayed with the Italians and the Swedes with the Swedes.
And they lived on in the...
Down on Water Street.
Water Street.
That was where the Italians.
There was a clan then, the Colony.
Oh yeah, there was quite a big clan of Italians in Jamestown. Now, of course, now they're lawyers, and like down to Faulkner, they had Italians down there, and the Spodos, they became lawyers, and the Italian people down there, like they worked on the section gang on the railroad, and. They worked in the woolen mills. They had a lot of them in the woolen mill, the Italians. Uh-huh. The woolen mill was right there where it is today, and there was all Italians around there, and they all worked in the woolen mill. Woolen mill was a different thing entirely, but they Italians, there's a lot of nice Italian people. We had quite a few that I went to school with, still know them, yeah.
How about sport activities, the Italians and the Swedes? Did you play soccer?
No. They didn't have... Soccer was way long time ago.
Before the 30s?
Oh yeah, that was way back. They didn't. Helge and them was soccer
they
players.
They played with the Swedish Reds.
Yeah.
Swedish Reds.
Yeah.
Were they the socialists then? Were they stamped as that, or were just the?
They didn't call them Swedish Reds. The soccer team, did they?
They called the soccer team Swedish Reds.
No kidding. Oh, I don't know.
So they were some tough ones, huh?
Yeah, they. And then that was the old timers, you know, that belonged to that. But they haven't had no soccer teams in Jamestown for years and years.
So the generation that were born here by Swedes, they didn't play soccer then? They went over to baseball and
yeah, that's right.
Football.
Yeah. Of course, now they're starting soccer again, you know, but, you know, now, but it's just much... you know, later years, but them days was mostly baseball, some football, but mostly baseball, and you know, that was the sport them days. They had Italian playing baseball with the Swedes, you know. Yeah.
Were the Italians among those players?
Yeah, they were Italian.
So then they mixed?
Well, yeah, then they mixed, yeah.
And they were growing up with
each other. As they grew up, you know, they mixed all right. I mean, you know, there was, like I say, I had, there was a lot of Italian kids that grew up, you know, together. Of course, they always called them the Dago, you know, that was a bad name for the Italians. And Wops, you know.
Wops, who were they?
Those Italians.
Oh,
that was the bad ones, you know.
Wops.
You know, they used to call them Wops. I don't know where they got the expression.
Like they were one grade below the Dagos.
Yeah, I guess so. And then the Italians, they always said, well, they come from Sicily, all the bad ones, you know. That's what they said, you know. They come from Sicily. They wasn't Italians, you know.
Oh, I see.
But the Italians, of course, they was like Carlson here, this fella bought the farm. His dad said that when his dad used to come up from Pennsylvania, where they'd go down Brooklyn Square and try to find some Italian to fight with, to pick a fight, you know. And they didn't like the Italians at all.
No. But it was pretty tough though, with no health insurance in those days.
Oh yeah, I'll say.
Broken noses.
Oh yeah, that's right. When they had a fight, they meant it. They didn't go around with gloves on. And
how about the drinking now? Were the Italians drinking as much as the Swedes? They always say the Swedes had whiskey.
No, the Italians always made their own wine, and they done all their drinking at home, where the Swedes would drink on the outside.
And they used more whiskey.
Yeah, and then the Italians during, you see, them was the days when whiskey wasn't legal. So the Italians would make their own whiskey, and then would get it from Buffalo. So they was the bootleggers. They would, like my dad could go in the fruit stand down to Faulkner, and it run by Italian, and he could buy his whiskey, or his, you know that.
And that was during the Prohibition?
Oh yeah, that was during Prohibition. That was before. See, in 34 is when they lifted that, when Prohibition was taken away, you know. That was when I was in the CC camp. That was legal January 1st, 1934, when they could go, to buy whiskey, you know. Yeah, you know.
In your opinion, was the Prohibition a bad...
Oh yeah, it was, you couldn't keep them from drinking.
They were still getting it.
They were still getting it. My dad would get bootleg stuff and be...
And some of it was pretty bad, didn't it?
Oh yeah, some of them died from it. And then they used to distill, in the furniture factory they had a lot of alcohol, you know, to mix for the paints and stuff. And they used to have a way of distilling that, so they would drink it. So then the Swedes would be all red-faced, you know, from drinking that stuff. Oh yeah, a lot of them died from it. Yeah, they had some way of they could take the poison out and then drink the alcohol. See, that was the trouble with the painters. They always claimed they was drunkards, you know, from painting. which a lot of them was, you know.
Because of the fumes.
Yeah, and then, no, but they could get the alcohol. See, they could get the clear alcohol them days. Instead of putting it in the paint, they would put it in their belly.
They get an instant suntan.
Yeah, my dad used to drink, you know, and he was with them painters that would get drinking, you know. One time he fell off a ladder, and old Carl Rose, the painting contractor, well, he brought him home. Is that truck, big truck out there yet? And they're drinking, you know, and, well, they had like kind of small places where they used to go drink. Of course, they opened up the bars, you know, then later years, but they...
So the Italians, they kept more to the wine drinking?
Yeah, that's right.
In home?
Yeah. You'd never see a drunk Italian. They mostly stayed at home when they done their drinking. Oh, yeah. You know, it was the sweets and... Well, once in a while, but most of them... See, they had their... The Italians drank their wine with their meals, you know, and that's where they... See, they didn't get the habit of, you know, wanting to drink all the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that... But... During that time, they were afraid to come drunk to the job, though.
Oh, yeah, they wouldn't. You never see anybody drunk come on a job.
They wouldn't take their risk.
Oh, no, no, never. Yeah, but like my dad was a good painter, and so they went on a job one time, and then they got to drinking a little, and then there was no workman's compensation or nothing them days, so... He brought them home, and then he hobbled around a little while, and then he went back to work. He go Carl Rose, he was an old sweet guy, you know, and he knew he was a good worker and had a family, and so they wouldn't fire him, you know. But they had their problems too them days. But no, you never come to work drunk, no.
So. You stayed on in Jamestown with the furniture for how long?
Well, I stayed around here all the time, you know. I never went anywhere else to work.
But with the furniture factories, how long did you keep going? Kept going on that?
See, I worked Monitor Furniture until 1941, and then I went into Mara Rockwell, and I stayed with them the rest of my...
And there was metal?
Yeah, oh yeah, that was Ball and Roar Barons.
Oh, and that was during the war you started?
Yeah, see, then the war started in December 7th, 1941, and I started down there August 1941, so then I was drafted in 1943.
And went
to the Navy for 2.5 years.
So when you left Monitor Furniture Company, what progress had the union done so far at that time?
Oh, they was going all right. They didn't have much trouble with the unions and that. They
were there any strikes during that time you were there?
No.
No strikes?
No strikes, no.
So how much did you ask for them every 2 years?
Well, I mean, it was only a nickel or...
An hour.
Yeah, or so, like that. We was never demanding too
but
much.
But no French benefits?
Well, no, we didn't even have vacations or anything in us. And we didn't have much then, you know. No, I never had a vacation in my life until I got to Mara Rockwell, you know, and that's otherwise.
So then you came into, you had to join another union there?
Yeah, then we joined another union there. And they'd already had that started.
Machinists,
you know.
Or?
UAW, United Auto Workers.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So I was recording secretary there for over 4.5 years. I was in the union. I met Walter Reuther, and I met Reuther's brother, and then I met some of the big organizers, you know.
So you were secretary from this district then, from Jamestown?
Yeah, I was from the UAW, the auto workers. See, there's about 1,500.
The delegate.
Yeah. See, I was recording secretary for the union for 4.5 years. And I was active in the
city. Oh, you mean for the national?
No, for you in Jamestown.
For Jamestown,
see, we had our own president, vice president, recording secretary, and see, I was one of the committee or, you know. Yeah.
So when you met now with Walter Reuther, for instance, or?
See, Walter Reuther come to Jamestown after the war because Myra Rockwell went out on strike, so Walter Reuther came here. We was, see that, when I first got out of the service, I wasn't going to go back to Myra Rockwell, so I went to be a auto mechanic down to Faulkner, but that only lasted about 2 months, wasn't it? And so I thought I better go back to Myra Rockwell because I worked for an old stingy guy that had a garage all his life, you know, and he only gave me 60 cents an hour, and then he would have me doing all kinds of jobs, but automobile work. So then I, see, we had 90 days to make up our mind when we got out of the service if we wanted to take our old job back. So I went back, and then we went out on strike for 9 months after the war, you know, after we got back. So then it's when Walter Reuther came here to try to settle the strike.
What was it? During the war, they couldn't strike?
Yeah, that's right.
There was a law against
it? Oh, yeah. Then there was no striking or nothing. Oh, yeah.
What happened then if somebody...
They'd throw them right in the service.
Oh, I see.
Oh, yeah. If you didn't mess around then, otherwise you was gone. They would... out you go.
So then after the war, they were ready to hit.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
What happened then? What kind of grievances were they...
Well, then, of course, the more wages, you know, and better working conditions. And then they went, you know, then they went to an extreme, you know, to want holidays and birthdays off and all that, you know. Somebody's got...